Okay. So we're on Precavus Parshlishi, Mishnah Beis. So I think we finished the first part of the Mishnah, right? With Shlomo Shamalchus, right?
Okay. Yeah.
So we're up to Rabbi Chananya ben Tradon Omar Shnaim Shiyoshvin Ve'ein Benehem Divrei Torah. Two people that are sitting and do not have Divrei Torah. Hare Zeh Moshav Leitzim. This is a Moshav Leitzim. Shenemar Uba Moshav Leitzim Lo Yashav. Okay. I just want to get this one.
Do you have them split, or is it actually one Mishnah? Here it's one Mishnah. Okay. I have the same book as he does now.
Okay, so the Mishnah quotes the first pasuk in Tehillim, right? That if two people are sitting, and they don't say Divrei Torah, that's a Moshav Leitzim. Okay, and the pasuk in Tehillim says, it's Tehillim Aleph Aleph. Okay, Ashrei Ish Asher Lo Halach Ba'atzas Rashayim Ubederech Hatayim Lo Amad Ubamoshav Leitzim Lo Yashav. Okay, now the Rambam says, so how does this show that Shnayim Shiyoshvin Ve'en B'nehem Divrei Torah is a Moshav Leitzim? The pasuk just says of a Moshav Leitzim Lo Yashav, that happy is a man who does not sit in the Moshav Leitzim. But it doesn't say what the Moshav Leitzim is. Okay, so the Rambam says Rayaso Shemoshav Leitzim Yikari Kol Moshav Shlo Yidabri Bo Divrei Torah. The Raya that any group that does not discuss Divrei Torah, or any gathering that does not discuss Divrei Torah, is a Moshav Leitzim. He says, Misof HaPasuk. It comes from the, actually, well, it's the way we have it, it's the second Pasuk, but, okay. Asher Amar Ki'im B'Torah Hashem. Okay. So the next Pasuk says, Ki'im B'Torah Hashem Cheftzo. Uvisoroso yege yomam velaila. Okay, but his delight is in the Torah Hashem. Okay, so the Rambam says, ki ilu amar, mipnei shehaya cheftzo betorah Hashem, lo yashav b'moshav leitzim, asher ein bo Torah Hashem. Okay, so what does the Rambam say? What is the raya? All right, what is the raya? How can you see from here that a Moshav Leitzim must be a place where people do not discuss Torah? Right? What's the raya? Right, because the raya is that the next pasuk says, Ki'im b'Torah Hashem cheftzo. Right, meaning that the desire for Torah is the delight of that person, and therefore he would not sit in the Moshav Leitzim. It must be a Moshav Leitzim is a place where there is no Torah, right? Because the pasuk says, "Blessed is a man who does not sit in the Moshav Leitzim, but on the contrary, whose desire is for Torah Hashem." Meaning that Moshav Leitzim, anybody whose desire is Torah Hashem, does not sit in a Moshav Leitzim because there's no Torah Hashem there. Right? Okay. So the contrast between the two Pesukim. You have the man who sits, whose Cheftzo is B'Torah Hashem, versus the man who sits B'Moshav Leitzim. So Moshav Leitzim is a place where there is no Torah Hashem. Okay? And that is why Shnayim Shiyoshvin Ve'ein Beinehem Divrei Torah, that is a Moshav Leitzim. Okay? Okay. Yep. Alrighty. Okay, so what could we analyze? Is there anything we could analyze here? Or Right? So that is the statement of Rev Hananya ben Chiradon. His statement is, forget about his proof is from the Psukim, but his statement is two people that sit, okay, and they do not have Divrei Torah, this is a Moshe of Leitzim. Okay.
What is Leitzim?
I'm sorry?
What is Leitzim?
Good question. That's question number one. Okay. But whatever it means, I can tell you it's not something good. Right? Literally, they translate it council, the rest of the pasuk is, let's put it this way, Ashrei Ihaisha Asher Ein Asher Lo Halach Ba'atzas Rashayim, okay, the council of Rashayim, evil people, Ubederech Chataim, sinners, Lo Amad, he doesn't stand, Umosh of Leitz and Lo Yashav. So a Leitz is somebody apparently that is akin or has something in common with Rashayim, Chataim, it's synonymous with Rishayim and Chataim. It's an evil person. Okay, what in particular, how do we differentiate between a Leitz and a Rasha? Good question. But one thing we know for sure, he belongs to the category, to the general category of an evil person. Some type of evil. He is a person that partakes of some kind of evil.
It's pretty extreme.
Okay. What'd you say?
It's pretty extreme.
What do you mean?
Like, what if they're just talking about the ball game?
Right. It's pretty extreme. What if they're just talking about the ball game? Or not only that, and if you're going to tell me, well, ball games are pretty evil, if you're an extreme person, fine, we could deal with those people too. What about if two people sit down because they have to discuss how to build their house? The man is a builder. The person needs a house. Or let's say there are two people. One is an accountant and one is his client. They're not talking about Torah. They're talking about a necessary matter. Or there are people that are coming to attack and I have to sit with the general to devise a strategy. I mean, that's not Divrei Torah, but certainly I don't think we would call those people Rishayim. There are people that are engaged in rational activities, and on the contrary, if they would all of a sudden start talking about Torah because we don't want to be considered Moshe of Leitzim, I would consider that to be foolish, and possibly that would be evil because they are, forsaking something necessary, and this is not the time to be learning Torah. So certainly you could devise cases where if you have a moshav where people are discussing Torah, we would have to consider them Rishayim, that would be considered a sin, right? When it's not the time to be discussing Torah. So how could you make a statement like that? That would seem to be, just a generic, too generic, including everything in one whatever the expression is. I'm sure there's some expression that I can't think of right now, but, you're throwing everything together in one basket. It doesn't make any sense.
The baby with the bath one.
What's that?
Throwing the baby out with the bath
one. Yeah, something like that, exactly. There you go. Okay, well. It sounds like something I've heard. Sounds like something that, one of my parents or uncles or a teacher, yes, has said that type of expression. You just, it doesn't make any sense. Okay. So what are our questions here? Number one, the first question, what is a late? Okay, so that we said that it belongs to the category of Russia, and we may not have to, at this point, it may not be necessary to isolate exactly what kind of a Rasha, although we may, that's a valid question. Why doesn't it say Moshe Rishayim? Okay? That's a valid question. Okay, but the second question was, what do you mean? You have two people that sit and should definitely not discuss Torah. They should discuss other things, and it would be wrong to discuss Torah. So how could you say, when you have two people that are sitting and not discussing Torah, they're evil? That's question number two. Do we have a third question? I think that we always should have at least three questions. Two questions is not... What would you say is the third question?
Is it sitting with someone else or just sitting by yourself?
Okay, very good. So the third question is, what do you mean, Shnayim Shiyoshvin? I could alter this statement and it would seem to make the same sense. I could say, Echad Shiyoshev, Ve'ein Osek B'divrei Torah, Harei Zeh, Yeshivas, Harihu Leitz. I don't know if my Hebrew is really up to par, but I think you know what I mean. Why is two? I mean, two people that aren't discussing Torah? Fine, five people that aren't, well, I guess five you could say is included. It means at least two. Not that if I have three, they're tzaddikim, right? But if you have at least two. But what about if I have one? A guy sitting there doing nothing, watching TV all day. I mean, so he's a tzaddik? I mean, one person has to learn too. So why is it only considered a rasha, rishayim, or leitzim, when you have two people? Okay. So we have arrived at the magic number. We have three questions. Okay. So I hate to ask this, but does anybody have a preference for which question? We can only tackle one question at a time. I mean, are there any more questions? I don't want to be really too stuck on the number three. Would you say there are any more questions?
I don't know if this is a question, but maybe. Okay. I mean, like, what if these two guys, you know, like, I mean, like, is there like a amount of time that, I mean, let's say these guys are chavrus the same. They learn from like 9 to 2 p.m.
Right.
They get up and then 20 minutes later they want to sit down and talk for like an hour.
Okay.
I'm saying like, and they don't study Torah. And like, but 20 minutes later. I don't know, they decided to learn. I mean, during that 1 hour, are they not...
Right.
Are they Rishon?
Good question. In other words, if the two people are learning, and then they need a break, so they talk about the baseball game. Did they go from being... Is that a transformative action? Are they from Tzadikin to Rishayim? Right? Or let's say I'm learning with somebody else. Two people are learning for hours. And one guy wants to keep learning, but the other guy says, listen, he's had enough. So he goes goes to another person to hang out with him and talk with him. So now, you know, do you say, well, the one guy's a Rasha, but the other guy's a Tzaddik because he was learning? Or no, or they both become a shrine? Right. In other words, is there any, that really, right? So... Would that fall? That's a good question. In other words, if a person learned and now he talks for 10 minutes, is he now a Rasha? Would that question fall under any of the three that we've already... Is that a subdivision of any of the three, or should we classify that as a fourth?
Sounds like the second.
It sounds like one of the questions they asked.
Okay, what's the second? Which one was
the second? What does that mean that they're sitting and not... learning Torah. I mean, you could sit for important things that preclude Torah.
Exactly right. So that would be a subdivision of that one. That's too general. You have cases where a person sits and talks and he's not a Rasha. Right? And because we have important matters to discuss that aren't Torah. Right? Under that would be that there are also times we are discussing unimportant matters. But maybe the person... needs a break. So even if he was discussing unimportant, I could show you a case where two people are tzaddikim and they're not discussing Torah. One, they're discussing another matter that's important. Number two, they're discussing unimportant matters, but they need a break. So maybe then also they'd be considered tzaddikim. Okay? So that's another case where you're showing the statement's too general. It's too broad. Too great a generalization. Okay. So it would seem that's the question that you guys want, that at least you are more interested in, the second question, right? Because that's where your mind went. I'll show you another case. So, right? Okay, so I don't know if this is a consensus. Does anybody have a counter preference, or are we happy to talk about that for a while?
I mean, is
there
why like
it's
a,
too great a generalization? What about that point? Yes.
Is there like a method on figuring out which question to ask first? Or?
That's what I'm working on. But we have to get a lot of cases before we can generalize. We don't want to generalize too quick. So do you want to talk about that, the second question?
Yeah. Okay. Sounds like it's the...
sounds like that should be the question. Yes, yeah, sounds like a reasonable question. It's too broad. Okay.
You can't really define what a Lloyd's is unless you really know the issue with the
good.
Case anyway.
Good. And also the last question, why one and not two, seems like more of a detail. But this question seems to be the most, I would say, striking and outrageous that a person could make such a generalization. So perhaps one method, one of our rules in which one to attack first, maybe one of the rules of that method would be whatever question is the most outrageous and crazy in the mind, that would be maybe a question that would be the first one to attack, because it would be the one that the mind is most curious about. How could this be? It generates the most energy, perhaps. Maybe that's a tentative first rule. Now, if we want to make this into an official project, maybe somebody should write it down, and we'll have, at the end of the year, we'll have a list of rules, and then we can really, you know, formulate them. Okay. Right. I'm just kidding. It's on the record, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm saying a little tongue-in-cheek, but, you know. But we don't want to concentrate on too many things. That should be rule number two, okay? So let's see if we could focus on this one thing, right? So the question is, what kind of a generalization is this? You tell me every time two people sit, it's an impossibility. Okay? So how could that be? How could you make such a general statement?
Well, I guess what does it mean that he's saying that they're Russian for doing it.
Okay.
What is that exactly?
Well, one second, that's question number one.
Oh, that's one?
That's one. Oh. What does it mean? What is a Lates? What kind of a Russia?
There's tension now.
Yeah, I mean...
How do you resolve this?
Right.
I know, but within the question number two...
Yeah.
It's saying...
Okay, we'll let you go. Because
what's question number two exactly again? Like,
okay, I don't want to like stifle your thing. So the question was, why is he saying that every single person, every time you have two people sitting together, and don't talk Torah, they're Rishayim? I could show you 100 cases where they're not Rishayim. Well, how could that be? What kind of a statement is that?
Right.
Okay. All right, how could you call these people Rishayim?
Perhaps a possible step.
Okay.
At least. Perhaps you could say that when the Mishnah says Vein Beinehem Divrei Torah, so it's not that like they're not exchanging Torah ideas, rather perhaps it's between either of them there's not some sort of backdrop that one of them is doing this in order to further their Yedias Hashem. Some another, I guess, Torah ideal. But Yedias Hashem was my intuition.
Okay. Good. Okay, I mean, what do you say? What do you say about that?
I don't know. If you're talking with your accountants and you want some tax stuff, I mean, even if he's not going for Yedias Hashem, it's still something that's important for you.
It's important to you, that's right. Okay.
Why is it important to you?
So you mean to pay less taxes?
Yeah.
Okay, so I want to, ultimately?
Yeah.
Well, even if I'm not a Lishma, are you going to say that if all my actions are on the same Shemaim, then I'm a Rasha?
If all your, well, I don't know, I think it's difficult for all your actions to be the same Shemaim, but at the very least, it matters
so this
of
is,
your actions.
Let's say this isn't Lishma, my telling it to my accountant. That means I'm a Rasha, though?
Well, he's saying like this. In other words, I think you're saying that a person that's interested in finances, right, is not inconsistent with Yedias Hashem. Because why does a person need finances? Because he has to exist. And why does he have to exist? Because he wants to pursue Yedias Hashem. Right? Now, if a person ignores his finances, then he's going to arrive at a state where he can't learn. And therefore, that's what's motivating the person to spend his time securing his finances rather than wasting his time, because the finance, he needs the finances. It's a necessity in order to engage in Yedias Hashem. So really, that's part of Yedias Hashem too, engaging in your finances. Why does a person want to build a house? If he doesn't have a place to live, how are you going to learn? Right? Okay, that's correct. I would say you that's absolutely correct. I mean, the way I was thinking of it, which is just a different angle, but it's basically the same idea, is that when people talk about things, right, when people get together to discuss some subject, subjects could only fall into one of two categories, okay? One is practical matters. Either I'm discussing a practical matter or I'm discussing something. In other words, I would break it up. Either I'm discussing with somebody else things I need or things I want. In other words, there are practical matters that a person needs to exist. And then there are matters that have to do with his desires. Things he doesn't need to exist, but his, so to speak, his psychological aspects, psychological factors. So you have practical factors. What are any activity that man is pursuing, it falls into one of two things. There are either things, activities that are related to my practical existence, things I need, and then there's activities, things I want to do. Okay? Are there any other activities that a person engages in? Either practical matters, things I want to, things I need to do, or things I desire, my psychological needs, my practical needs and psychological needs. Right? I'm using the term psychological loosely. So psychological needs means anything, learning, things I want to understand, entertainment, anything that I need to do because of my desires, internal desires, either a desire for knowledge, a desire for wealth, any kind of motivating desire. So either I do things because of practical needs. I don't necessarily want this. This is not my desire, but I need it. I need to make a living. I need to have a house. I need practical finances. Or I have time, things that I do in my leisure. I don't need to do this, but this is where my desire lies. Okay? So that's any pursuit that a person has to be in one of those two categories. Okay? So therefore, when he says, Shnayim sheyoshvin, okay, what type of yeshiva is he talking about? He doesn't differentiate, but we must say that when he says two people that get together are osek in something, he's only talking about one type of isoskus, the desire isoskus, the psychological isoskus, not the practical. You can't tell me that his statement was directed to a practical isoskus. That's impossible. Doesn't make any sense. His statement means shnayim sheyoshvin, they get together. What are they getting together for? This is a voluntary, this is not a mandatory meeting. Mandatory means I need it. Something that fulfills my needs. I have to have this. This is a practical necessity. He's talking about a voluntary yeshiva. Why are we getting together? This is in my free time. These are things I want to do. You see? So that's the, you have to confine the statement to that. He means, Shnayim Sheyoshvin means they get together for entertainment, not for practicality. Okay? So therefore, if you say that, now the statement, we can give some sense to it. Right? You have two people that get together for entertainment. What is their entertainment? Now he says, if their entertainment is anything that's not Divrei Torah, that's rishus. Okay? So we have eliminated one of our problems. One problem was, I could show you 100 cases of people get together and they're not Rishayim, they're Tzaddikim. Okay? That, now you cannot show me any case like that. Because any case that you will show me that is logical, that a person needs to discuss with another person, that's a practical matter. That he's not talking about. Okay? So he is talking about two people who get together for entertainment, for their free time. Okay? And they're not talking Torah, they're Rishayim. Okay?
Why is that any less extreme?
Well, it is less extreme. Let's put it this way. It's a statement that now is extreme, but not nonsensical. In other words, there's a difference. If you tell me that the statement includes people to get together for practical matters, that's nonsensical. Doesn't make any sense. It's impossible. You see, if you tell me that anybody who gets together for entertainment and is not talking Torah is a Rasha, it's not nonsensical, it's extreme. We could accuse the author of being extremist. Don't be so extreme. But we can't accuse him of being nonsensical. Is it right? Do you see the difference?
I mean, it's still not very defined.
Not defined, right. It is not defined. But it's not nonsense. We've removed the absurdity. Right? Because the absurdity really was, how could you tell me a guy sits down with his accountant that he's a Russia? It's absurd. So we've removed the absurdity. Now the only problem we're left with is not an absurdity, it's something we don't understand. There's a lot of things we don't understand. This is something we don't understand. You mean to tell me that if people get together to watch a football game, they're Rishayim? I don't understand that. You see, I wouldn't call that absurd. You see, because he could say, well, they don't have to get together. I could justify the statement by saying, listen, there's no reason they have to get together. Why do they have to get together? Okay, maybe you don't agree with calling them a Russia, but certainly you can't justify that action by saying, no, they are tzaddikim. On the contrary, they get together to watch a football game, they're tzaddikim. Nobody's going to say that. You see, so there's no absurdity. So we remove the absurdity. Now the question is, there still remains, we don't understand it. Right? So the question is, how does that make sense? I mean, we don't understand why people get together. I mean, what's so bad? Okay, they're not learning. But I wouldn't say they're Rishayim. I would say they could be doing something better with their time. Fine. They're wasting the time, let's say. Two people that get together and waste their time. Call them a Russia? I mean, it's not. Why is that a Russia? Okay, you wasted your time. You could have done something better. It doesn't make you a Russia.
This is just it's just a mida. It's just a bad mida.
It's a bad mida. It's a bad mida. You're not. You should be learning now. You're wasting your time. But what is the? Why would he consider that? Why would he call that rishus?
Well, I have a start, maybe.
Okay.
If we're talking about the realm of your desires and your wants, so then whatever you're talking about is something that you're interested in, something that you value. So if that thing is outside of Torah, then you could say that you're expressing value, you're setting value. It's, you know, I don't know, connected, but at least outside of the realm of Torah.
Say that again. The value, you're expressing value what?
Values that are outside of Torah.
Outside of Torah.
Connected, I don't know.
Connected, okay. But it's definitely outside of Torah. Right. Okay. Okay, good. So in other words, if we're saying that the statement is confined to what a person wants, right? So you're saying the person wants really carry with it a value. You're saying, well, I want it. I'm not going to say that's a dumb thing. I want it because, hey, it's a good thing. It's an important thing. It has some kind of value. That's correct. So when a person engages in something, he must assign a value to it. He doesn't engage in something and think it's stupid.
Okay. Does enjoyment just to relax a practical thing, or it's a desire?
Okay, so, well,
let's say two guys get together and just play basketball.
Yeah.
Is that a practical thing, or that's a desire?
That's a desire. Because if they didn't play basketball, nothing bad would happen to them. They don't. It's not a practical need, unless they're doing it for exercise. If they're doing it for exercise, then you're correct. Then the state won't apply. But let's say they already exercised, and now they don't have to exercise. There's no practical need. So why they keep playing? Well, they want to. It's a desire. It's their time off. It's their leisure.
Well, what if they just need a break?
Okay.
Is that a practical thing?
No. We can't call that a practical thing. Then we're diluting what do we mean by practical? I mean, then everything becomes practical. We have to stick to a clear-cut practical versus desire. Now, if you want to introduce an idea of needing a break, you'll have to break up the idea of desire into two categories. There are two kinds of desires. That would be good. So you're saying there are two kinds of desires.
Yeah, I guess so. If we're not saying it's a practical thing, then it has to be a different kind of desire, which is appropriate.
Right, a different kind of psychological. It falls under psychological need. I have a psychological need. I have to, but it's not a practical need. It's a psychological need. Right? Or at least I think it's a psychological need. I mean, everybody who does things that they want, think it's a psychological need.
It's an outlet.
Okay, so I want to know one thing. Are you disagreeing with him or are you agreeing with him?
No, I'm agreeing with him. I'm just saying that I agree that if your desire is something that's outside of the realm of Torah, then that's what you value.
Yes.
But I'm saying more. I'm saying that, not in addition to what you're saying, but something else.
Okay. Right.
That you could have a desire that could be beneficial for you.
Okay.
And like, not... Okay. Because it's impossible to be constantly be involved in Torah. It's just,
right.
It's just impossible.
Absolutely.
It's a reality. It's just not going to happen.
Absolutely.
The two guys who are conversers all day, I mean, for majority of the time, they need a break. So they want an outlet, and you know, to relieve their minds or to let it sit and and take a break so it can be refreshed or whatever.
Correct.
And that's a desire. That is a desire to I guess get more involved in Torah.
Okay. Whatever. Okay. Good. So where does this? Okay. So now do we have? So, what do we have at this point? In other words, Yaakov is saying that when I engage in entertainment, then I am assigning to that action a certain importance. In other words, there's no such thing as innocent entertainment. When I engage in something for the purpose of getting a certain psychological benefit, and that's the thing I want to do for whatever reason, I must view it in a certain way that there's some kind of value in this thing. Okay? Right? That's his basic point. So whether the thing is, I need a break, or no, this is what I want to do, In either case, there must be a certain value attached to the thing. Because if a guy needs a break, okay, but he's not going to, you know, it depends. What the guy does for that break is dependent on him. You know, one guy will do for the break X, and another guy will do Y. What's the difference? Because this guy likes X. So he reverts back to things he likes, and that gives him a break. Okay, so you could get into why the person is engaging, why he desires this or why he values it. You can get into all of that. But the bottom line is that if he's choosing this for his entertainment, whether it's an essential entertainment or an accidental entertainment, the point is if it entertains him, it means he looks at that thing with a certain value. He attaches a certain value to it. So your point doesn't contradict him. It's sort of, it's a subdivision, right? It is true there are many reasons why a person pursues entertainment. But the point is, the bottom point is, if he's entertained by it, he has to assign a certain value to it. You can't look at that thing as being a totally stupid thing and be entertained or have an outlet. Impossible, okay? Okay, so that's good. So in other words, we don't know necessarily why he's a Rasha, but we do know one thing. If that's his time off entertainment, it means there's a certain value in that to him. Okay? Now the question is, could we understand? We had our third question. Okay? We have two other questions. One question is, what does it mean, Rasha? Okay? But the other question was, why two? Why don't I say it? Well, if one guy, let's say one guy, likes to spend his time watching TV, not learning, right? So why can't I say that's a false thing too? That is assigning a value to TV. So if two people watch TV, that's assigning a value. If one people watch one person, that's assigning a value. What's the difference? Why only two?
It's a
chavrusa. This is my chavrusa.
It's a qualitative thing.
That's right. Exactly. He has a chavrusa. This way they can really work out the nuances, why the guy did this and not that.
It makes it more real, I guess.
Okay, correct. In other words, if you do something with another person, it makes it more real. Why does it make it more real? How does it make it more real? Could you elaborate on that a little?
Just give me a minute. I was just saying stuff before.
Okay, that's a good. No, that it's, yeah.
I think it's true that, like, when you're with a person and you're engaging in any sort of activity, I mean, you could. Like, if you have a question in that thing or something's interesting, then you'll bring it up with the person, right? You make conversation, you'll bring it up with the person. In that sense, you're going to start, like, you know, you're not, like, you don't have to be going, like, be Ian in a TV show and pick apart every detail. But at the same time, like, you'll say, like, that part of the TV show was interesting, and then they'll ask you why it was interesting, and you'll start going back and forth, why you think this is interesting, right? Okay. What's cool about it, what do you like about it, what you don't. And so you're like, at one point it was just a break, maybe even in order to get you to be in the right mindset to be able to learn later.
Right.
But at the same time, now it's just becoming an activity in and of itself.
Okay. Right. Like, now the level of involvement is greater. You're sharing it with another person. That's correct.
Right. Like, instead of a break, it's an activity.
It's an activity. I see. That's good. Another person adds to it, right? It's more than just an outlet. Now it's a whole activity. That's correct. Okay. So really the amount a person can get into something is not the same when you're alone as when you're with another person. Okay. Right. Okay. Could we make it a little more precise? In other words, it's true when you're with another person, there's something to talk about. There's more. It brings it out more. right? But why is that? What is the... Is there something that is definitive?
Can you say that having another individual kind of could reinforce their value?
Right, it reinforces the value. That's right. The talking about it, when you're talking, when you're discussing and sharing with another person, it does reinforce the value.
Right, it brings it to light.
It brings it to light. In other words, if another person... You see, you're happy when the other guy's interested. Let's say you'd want to share a thing with another person. And the other person, the moment you brought it, when you start bringing it up and you start talking about it, he's like looking at you like, what are you talking about? That's the stupidest show in the world. You're not going to really want to, right? It sort of will, the interest, that's it. There's no more... It sort of puts a very big kibosh, they say, on the thing. Right? When you talk to another person and he's interested too, that, right, that like sort of confirms that, oh, this is really a good thing. Right? How did you put it? That it...
It brings it, it reinforces
it. It reinforces the thing. Because if somebody else is interested, oh, this is... Not just an anomaly in me that I like this thing. There's something to like here. You see, that guy likes it.
The value is real.
It's a certain value. There's a certain real value. It reinforces it, right? If the other guy looks at you like, what TV? What? It's nonsense, right? Then you sort of feel like, oh, yeah, I guess it's nonsense, right? You sort of, you can't, there's no reinforcement in reality because in your mind you know it's nonsense and... And if the other guy confirms that, like, there's no way to sort of reinforce it in reality. But if the other guy agrees with you, okay, you right. See, this is a thing. People like this. This is a reasonable thing. Right. Right? So that's why people do like to share these things. It's not only, it's true a person likes, you know, to share with others. He enjoys that. But there's also a confirmation. It makes him feel secure. And that's part of the security. The other guy likes this too. See that? This is a real thing. You see? That's why you want to share. You want to share. You don't want to keep it to yourself. Right? It's more fun with the other person. It's true. There's a relationship. That is true, too. It's not just you want to confirm it. But there's a certain relationship. You like to do things with other people because there's a bond with other people. But that bond also has another. So there's really two things, really. Actually, it's an interesting thing that there are two ways... That's an interesting thing. It's not just... In other words, there's really two aspects here. One aspect is, when I share with another person, it creates a relationship with the other person. And that is something that a person wants. He wants to not to be alone. He wants to be with other people. You see? So it's reaffirmed by this psychological relationship. This guy now, I have a relationship with the guy. And this is the bond of our relationship. But number two, so there's a psychological benefit. Number two, there's also another benefit in terms of his value system. He says, well, if the other guy agrees, oh, you see that? It must be true. You see? You know what I'm saying? In other words, it reaffirms it because other people agree with it, then it gives the person a certain sense that this is real. You see? So that's a very powerful thing. And that's why people like to share their ideas with others. Because if the other person agrees, then if the other person disagrees, he's not too happy. Right, he becomes sort of, it sours the old, forget it. You see? So that really is, it shows you that when a person has a psychological desire that he cannot share with another person, it does not really have the same impact. But if a person has a psychological desire that he can share with somebody else, it really solidifies and enhances that idea. Interesting thing. So that's why in general people are very moved by ideas that a lot of people accept. And if people don't accept it, he feels like an outcast. Like, right? Like a person that comes up with a new concept and a new idea, and if he sees it's real, there's always a problem. If people will reject it, he feels psychologically like an outcast. You see, so it requires a tremendous amount of confidence to keep to that idea. Okay? Because of the power of the other person. Interesting thing. That's why they say there was a guy actually that, maybe this is a little off the topic, but there was a scientist. I think he was a physicist, I think, but chemical, Boltzmann, I think was his name. So he came up with this unbelievable idea, and people, it was so revolutionary that the entire scientific world ridiculed him. This is crazy. He was very hurt personally. Like, he felt like nobody likes him or whatever. I don't know. He couldn't get any type of social acceptance, and it psychologically hurt him tremendously. And he committed suicide because that idea to him was like his whole, you know, identity. And after he committed suicide, a few years later, they proved his idea. So it shows you the power of another person's acceptance. Very powerful. And once you have that acceptance, it's hard to break away. And if you don't get the acceptance, it's hard to stick to that thing. You see, so if a person is a chacham, then the idea makes sense. So he doesn't need the other person. You see, unless psychologically he has a problem. Right, but if the idea that he's pursuing does not make sense, is just psychologically appealing, then without the other person, it's going to be very difficult for him to reinforce that idea. Not going to be possible unless he's really an unusual person. But otherwise, if it's a psychological idea and he does not have the confirmation of another person, very difficult. See, then he's on his own, he has this weird idea, forget it. You see, but the moment another guy agrees, oh, now it's a great idea. It's really, this is, yeah, you see, he likes it, oh, this is catching steam. You see, so the other person is really reaffirms and psychologically gives the idea tremendous power. You see, so that's why if he joins with another person in this psychological enjoyment, it gives it tremendous value. Interesting, interesting thing.
Yeah, I have another example of this.
Yeah.
So Richard Feynman wrote in his memoirs about it was some physics thing about the way oil droplets fall. And like this guy named Millikan did this original study, and Richard Feynman said that if you look at the studies that were done about this thing afterwards, in Millikan's original experiment, there's something that was off, that caused the results to be off by a little bit, and so if you look at the experiments afterwards, they all get slightly and slightly closer to what it actually is, and then at a certain point, the results were correct because, the reason why people didn't just realize that the original experiment had been incorrect and just that the results were different was because people took the results that were similar to Millikan's, but they were slightly different, because that was what the other person had done, and then over time it shifted to be correct, but people didn't just want to be different from what
right,
had
right, done. Right. People do not want to be different. That's right. That's right. Okay. So. Okay, so what is the situation now? So we're saying that this is a process of reconfirming a person's internal desires. Right? Okay. So that's really, in other words, isn't that really what he's saying? He's saying that what's the definition of a rasha? The definition of a rasha is a person whose value system is totally based on his own emotions and not based on reality. In other words, his value system is based on what he wants the world to be, not what the world is. Right? Now, the only way that a person can have that value system is if he shares it with somebody else. If he doesn't share it with somebody else, he could have it partially, but he can't. It cannot be something that he assigns a reality to. He has to know that it's something. It's his own idiosyncrasy. But if he shares it with others, you see, then then the idea has a different kind of meaning to him than if he just keeps it privately. Right? So I think the statement is not so much like we're going to find out who's a Rasha, or to give the guy a label. Hey, this guy's a Rasha. You see, he was sitting with another guy and they weren't talking about Torah. Hey, he's a Rasha. You see? I don't think that's what it means. I think it means this is the mechanism that is the ingredient for rishus. He's giving you the ingredient for rishus. You know, this is the ingredient, because rishus really has to do with a value system that's based on what he wants the world to be, not what it is. You see? Now, how does that value system? How does that value system take root? This is the way it takes root, with other people. And without other people, it can't take root. Do you know what I mean? That's the ingredient. It doesn't necessarily mean if a guy sat down in this place, now he's a Rasha. 10 minutes ago he was a Tzaddik, now he's a Rasha. It's just telling you this is the ingredient. I mean, I think that in that sense, it is a logical statement. He's giving you the elements that are the ingredients for a person's becoming a Rasha. These are the elements.
So it has to help.
What's that?
Is it saying that they are sitting and only learning Torah, or is it saying that they're also learning Torah?
What do you mean?
Hmm? This is sometimes used him different Torah.
Right.
Doesn't sound like they're only involved in Torah. And if they're not only involved in Torah, then
he's saying they're not involved in Torah. Ain't been him.
Oh yeah, I'm saying even if they are, it doesn't sound like that would address this issue. Assuming that they're not. Only, let's say two guys sit down to, they watch five episodes of a TV show, and they also have a 10-minute conversation about Torah.
Right.
It doesn't sound like it's going to address this issue.
So it's two different. Then that's two different phenomena, right? It's two different phenomena. That means at one point they're engaged in a process that confirms their internal desires. And then they've gone to a different process. I mean, you know what I mean? He's just addressing this situation, this type of situation. He's not telling you how to identify who's, you know what I mean? He's telling you a process, how the corruption in a person develops. You see, now obviously, if a person is doing this for an outlet, so that we have to take up. That's a good question. That was one of the questions. Let's say a person is getting together to watch TV for an outlet. How would you analyze that? Okay, so we have to take that off. We could take that off. But, I mean, I think the main thing is that we understand what the sense of this is. Because our first question was it's an absurd idea. Our second question was that it's an extreme idea. You see? But now we're showing it's not an extreme idea because he's trying to show you the elements in how this develops. How the false idea develops in a person. You see? That, he's showing you that. That's not an extreme idea. You know, it's an extreme idea if you're trying to identify particular individuals. If that's what he was doing, identifying particular individuals, say, hey, those two guys over there are sitting there talking for a half hour and they didn't say any Torah, they are a shine. You see? So if he's identifying particulars, then it's an extreme. But he's not identifying particulars. That doesn't make any sense. What he's doing is he's trying to describe a process. And that is true. That is true. That is a process which reaffirms a certain crazy idea in a person's mind. And without this process, he can't really make that crazy idea concrete. The only way to make that crazy idea concrete is only one way. You need another person. And that's true. You see? So that's really why it's not an extreme idea. Because it's telling you a general principle, not a particular. Now the question is, how do we apply this to particulars? Okay, we're not... Now is when we end the shiur. Because... No, but seriously, right? That's he's trying to give you a formula, an idea here. Okay, how you apply this to particulars, good question. But we have to... Wait, we have to hold that for next week, and hopefully you guys will forget about it next week.
did we go over the waste ones?
No.
Oh,
yeah.
Hey, Josh.
You did that next week?
No. We'll do that. We'll do that in 2 weeks.
Oh. Hey, Josh.
No. Right. Well, joke. Okay?
Yep.
But our job is at least we could make sense of the underlying idea. We don't have to answer every question here because we didn't write this. If we were the authors and people would come to us, yes, we'd have to defend everything, but we're not the authors. We're just trying to show a little bit of information we're trying to uncover. And if we've accomplished that, we're very happy. And even if we didn't accomplish that, we're very happy that we were able to ask the questions.
That's rule number 3.
That's rule. Yeah, very good. Very good. Exactly. And even if we weren't able to ask any questions, we should be happy to know that this is above us. We can't even approach this. So we should just try to study something simpler. So there's no way we can lose here. That's rule number 4. To remember, there's no such thing as failure. Everything you do is a success. Okay.
Easy.
What's that?